Les conférences du Collège de France.
Bonjour à tous. Très heureux aujourd'hui d'accueillir au Collège de France Renata Landgrafová, qui est actuellement directrice de l'Institut tchèque d'égyptologie de l'Université Charles de Prague. C'est une égyptologue qui a suivi un cursus de formation en linguistique comparée à l'Université Harvard aux États-Unis, d'égyptologie et d'études du Proche-Orient ancien à l'Université de Pennsylvanie, puis à l'Université de Bâle ensuite. En Suisse, elle a soutenu une thèse en 2008 sur les inscriptions biographiques du Moyen-Empire. Depuis 2004, elle enseigne à l'Université Charles de Prague, dont elle est senior researcher depuis 2017. Et elle dirige depuis 2023 donc l'Institut tchèque d'égyptologie, dont on connaît tous les nombreux travaux. Elle a fait de nombreuses publications, plusieurs monographies, à la fois sur les inscriptions du Moyen-Empire, les autobiographies, mais aussi, vous le savez, aussi sur les tombes dont elle va parler aujourd'hui. Elle a étudié aussi l'évolution du concept d'individualité dans la société égyptienne, qui a fait l'objet d'études particulières. Renata Landgrafová, c'est aussi une chercheuse de terrain. Elle participe activement en tant qu'épigraphiste au chantier de l'Université Charles sur le site d'Abouzir, chantier qui a livré depuis plusieurs décennies des découvertes exceptionnelles qui ont fait considérablement progresser nos connaissances, à la fois donc sur l'Ancien Empire, hein, puisque l'équipe d'Abouzir travaille sur les pyramides de la 5e dynastie, et la basse époque, hein, le cimetière d'époque saïto-perse, avec la découverte de tombes somptueusement décorées de la fin de la 26e dynastie, notamment celle de la tombe de Youefa, dont il sera largement question aujourd'hui. Et cette tombe apporte un corpus entièrement nouveau de textes funéraires issus du contexte memphito-héliopolitain. Une source exceptionnelle donc pour comprendre nombre de représentations qui étaient connues jusqu'ici de manière allusive dans de nombreux monuments égyptiens et qui sont explicités dans ces décors des tombes d'Abouzir. Et je n'hésite pas à dire que ce corpus est certainement l'un des apports les plus significatifs aux études sur la religion égyptienne tardive au XXIe siècle. Et donc aujourd'hui, nous avons le plaisir d'entendre Renata Landgrafová, qui va nous parler donc des serpents et des démons gardiens de l'au-delà dans les tombes saïto-perses d'Abouzir. Renata, the floor is yours.
Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon or good evening. I never know which is which anywhere, so whatever you prefer. I'm sorry I can't speak French good enough to be able to present this lecture in French, but I will try to speak slowly in English so that it's easier to understand. Also today, I hope we will have more fun with snakes and demons. If you are afraid of snakes, don't be, because in the tomb of Youefa, it says on several occasions that whoever knows the names of the snakes will not be harmed by them, but will be protected, and you will now be given all of the necessary knowledge that the snakes will protect you, not harm you. So just to contextualize a little bit, what you see here is a not up-to-date satellite image of the Abusir necropolis. Now there are a lot of highways, but this is still 2 years ago, there were no highways. And you can see the royal pyramids of the 5th dynasty, and just, so to say, in the shadow of the pyramids of the 5th dynasty, we find the Saïd Persian Shaft Tomb Cemetery that the Czech Institute has been working on since now, a long time ago. The cemetery itself was built within about 40 years, a very, very short time, and Because of this, but also because of the names and titles that we find in the tombs, we surmise that these people are either an extended family, or at least they must have known each other. And most of them, but I will show this in a while as well, are actually high military officials. So these are the inhabitants of the Abu Sir Shaftum Cemetery. The first one, they are here presented in the order of discovery by our institute. So the first one was Ujaho Resnet, who was an admiral, physician, and counselor to the Persian king, came into modern history as the first known traitor in history. This may not be so true, the first known traitor is because of this statue that you can see here. It's now in the Vatican Museums, and it bears his biography. And in it, he speaks about various things that he did for the Persian kings. Among others, he created his statuary in Egyptian, but also he speaks about persuading the Persian king to allow the renewal of several Egyptian temples, including the Temple of Neith in Sais, which at this time was like one of the most important temples. So traitor, or someone who tried to use his influence to actually perpetualize ancient Egyptian culture. I let you judge by yourselves. The second tomb that was discovered was that of UFR, about whom I will talk the most today. Among these military officials, UFR is only bearing priestly titles. He has a title of Wap priest, he has a title of Kherebhutneit, which we don't know exactly what it meant. At some time, Egyptologists thought that this may have been the high priest of Neith, but if this is true, then there would have to be several ones at the same time, which is kind of not possible. So probably not, still a high priestly title. Third one, and he's not red because it's a smaller tomb. The owners in red have large shaft tombs. The owners in white have smaller shaft tombs. Is Padihor. He only bears the title of king's acquaintance. Now, this does not mean that he didn't bear any other titles. This is the same. This is true for also the other inhabitants of the Abu Sir shaft tombs. The problem is that if you go back in your mind to the satellite image, most of these tombs have very little in terms of superstructure, definitely very little preserved in terms of superstructure. So they had the pyramids above themselves, and the tomb, the decoration, everything was down below. Where we have some remnants of superstructure preserved, it has more titles than we actually find down below in the tomb. But in case of Padihor, absolutely no superstructure has been preserved. We don't know even if there was one. Something must have been there, but how big, how decorated, we have no idea. In Menech ibn Nekau, we actually did find remnants of a large superstructure made of beautiful white limestone blocks. It bears a lot of scenes that resemble scenes that can be found in the nearby Saqqara necropolis, very much inspired by Old Kingdom tombs, by scenes in Old Kingdom tombs, and a lot of titles of Menech ibn Nekau. In case of Menech ibn Nekau, though, we do find the titles also in one line within the burial chamber itself. The last but one tomb discovered at the cemetery was that of Wahibre Merineit, who was a commander of Greek mercenaries, or some foreign mercenaries, Greek is not certain, and his tomb is huge, the biggest at the entire necropolis, but largely unfinished. There is even no real burial chamber. It's more like a burial shaft, therefore no decoration. A chamber was probably planned because we found huge limestone blocks, but only these blocks, no decoration, not really arranged in any way that it would make the burial chamber. He had two sarcophagi, an outer and an inner one, and on the outer sarcophagus we did find this military title. The last one that we discovered was Jehudiemhat, another smaller tomb, and he bore the titles of king's acquaintance and royal scribe. So I will only speak about the ones that you can see at the moment, because, as I said, in case of Ujahoresnet as well, but also Vahibremerinate, there is very little decoration preserved. And Padihor has basically kind of standard decoration that you would expect in a shaft tomb of this time. On the picture here, you just see this is a view from inside of the mummification deposit of Vahibremerinate. It's the largest mummification deposit ever found in Egypt. The second one is Menehipnekau. And this is just one picture of many of the way this mummification deposit was arranged. It was arranged in clusters of these huge vessels in a kind of a spiral way from bottom to up. So very, very interesting. Also, it kind of tells us how they deposited it, and it should tell us more about how they worked with the mummification deposit. Unfortunately, our colleague Květa Smolaríková, who worked on the pottery of these mummification deposits, died last year, so we now are passing the work to other people. So it's the full publication will take a little bit more time. So we will start with the smallest tomb, and that is Jehudiemhat. And we'll start with Jehudiemhat because it's the easiest one in terms of snakes and demons. Here you can see the entrance to the burial chamber at Discovery. And the burial chamber, soon after Discovery, still not fully cleared, still with remains of Jehudiemhat. Also with the note this is the hole that thieves made in order to get into the tomb and fully loot it. We did find the full decoration, but almost nothing in terms of burial equipment, because that was taken away by thieves in antiquity. Well, probably in Coptic times, because not here, but in the tomb of Vahibremerinate, they actually left behind a large vessel for water and small drinking vessels. And those Květa still has dated them to Coptic times. So they left a signature, so to say. Probably the same thieves everywhere. So here in Jehudiemhat, we have on the northern or entrance wall, this is of course a orthophoto map, you can't make a picture like this in the tomb. Don't ask what this is, I have no idea. And if any of you have any idea why this is there, this is like down below, this is floor level of the burial chamber. And this is already this, the entrance is quite small. This is something a normal person can't crawl through. It's very small, kind of weird window. We have no idea what it's doing there. But this entrance wall bears a sequence of anti or serpent spells from the pyramid text, which unfortunately broke the theory of Ramadan Hussein, who, when he was working on these serpent spells, he said no two Sayyid Persian shaft tombs have the same sequence. But Jehudiemhat has exactly the same sequence as one of the sequences in Psametic the Physician. So, you know, nothing is ever certain in ancient Egypt. Nothing is ever certain in ancient Egyptian texts and tombs. And this is one of the theories that once again was disproven by a new discovery. And these serpent spells are actually here in Jehudiemhat exactly when they are supposed to be in the shaft tombs of Sayyid Persian period. That is guarding the entrance, because they had a dual function. One was their content, and their content describes all the possible ways in which an ancient Egyptian could meet a serpent, all the possible ways in which he could be endangered by a serpent, and kind of neutralize the danger of these serpents. Interestingly enough, the snakes themselves are never killed. They are mostly told to turn away, or they are told that the deceased did nothing against them, so why would they do something against the deceased? And this is probably because, at least in these tombs, they actually also serve as protectors of the entrance. So anything that would come through the entrance is actually neutralized and guarded by these serpents. Unfortunately, as you can see in, as you have seen on the last picture, in the tomb of Jehudi Emhat, they only worked as guardians against archaeologists because the thieves came through the ceiling where there were no snakes. The body of Jehudi Emhat lay within a stone sarcophagus with no coffin. It's a kind of coffin-like sarcophagus because these goddesses of the West you normally see on the bottoms of coffins, not on stone sarcophagi. And she protects him as a kind of mother goddess inside. This is also a photogrammetry image. And in order to get to it, our wonderful photographer had to get through a hole which was this big. This is all there is. This is another of the holes made by thieves. They took the entire mummy of Jehudi Emhat out, didn't leave almost anything inside, and so we had to clear it through this and make images through this tiny hole. If you want to work in Egypt, you have to be very ingenious because there are many challenges presented down below the surface of the earth. Now, let's go to the next tomb, that is Menech ibn Nekau. Menech ibn Nekau is just next to the tomb of Jehudi Emhat. And Jehudi Emhat, when I first entered the burial chamber of Jehudi Emhat, I actually felt like I was entering a miniature Menech ibn Nekau. It looks almost exactly the same, only it's much, much smaller. You will probably not be able to read much on these images. I just put them here because these are the same, not exactly the same, but the same sequence of serpent spells that guard the entrance of the tomb of Jehudi Emhat. Here they are located on the outer side of the outer sarcophagus, behind the head of the mummy. So they guarded the head of the mummy. And that was not even at the entrance, that was facing the entrance. This all because Menech ibn Nekau found another set of guardians of his entrance. Here you can see a little bit of the entrance. And this is part of the sequence out of which I've cut one image here. This is the favorite image of children when I do lectures for children. They love this because the first demon who is sitting there, or protector deity, he's called the one who eats the excrement of his buttocks. And of course, little children love things like this. So interestingly enough, though, this also tells us a lot about how the Egyptian observed the nature around them, because this guy has got the head of a turtle or tortoise. I never know which one is which. But anyway, these animals are actually coprophagous. So it makes perfect sense that he is caught like this, because the turtle actually does this. This is the chapter 144 from the Book of the Dead, which describes the seven gates of the underworld with their guardians. And once again, this at the same time gives EUFR the necessary knowledge to pass through these gates, but also any thieves without this knowledge would not be able to pass through the gate into the tomb. Once again, the Coptic thieves were clever and entered through the ceiling. So this is, again, only protection against archaeologists. Now, almost exactly the same thing can be found. This is the entirety of the sequence, all the seven gates and their guardians. We find a very similar thing inside the sarcophagus of Menech ibn Nekau. But in case of the tomb of Menech ibn Nekau, the ceiling is still there, and the space to maneuver between the sarcophagi and the ceiling of the burial chamber is very small. So in order to get into the sarcophagus and to document all of the text that we in any way can get to, our photographer, once again, has to devise such ingenious tools. This one is actually a toy car from a toy shop, a selfie stick, and of course this kind of silver tape, which I think all of you who've ever worked in Egypt know very well, because it holds together everything. At that time, it was Miroslav Barta who was leading the expedition, and when we came to him after one weekend and gave him a receipt for a selfie stick and a toy car, he really refused to reimburse us. But then we showed him this, and he was persuaded. Of course, if the space is big enough, you just crawl inside. This is my colleague Dana Bielohoubková, and read the text as they are. Of course, shouting the gardener numbers of the signs out to another person, because you can't write anything. Sometimes we have quite ingenious names for these signs, because of course a hair can be like about three different signs. So the face we call Obama, because it looks like Obama. This is the space that you have between the inner sarcophagus of Menachem Nekau and the outer one. You actually can crawl inside, but the space is really, really very small. And it happened to me once that I really thought that somebody would have to pull me out by my legs. In the end, I managed to crawl out myself. And between the top of the sarcophagi, there is another sequence of these guardians, guardian demons, guardian deities. You know that there are no real demons in ancient Egypt. It's always a kind of deity, and it depends. If you know that deity, it works for you. If you don't, it can work against you. But it's not inherently evil. It's only powerful. So another thing that we used was something that we actually reserved for shisha, aluminium foil. So we did not get to smoke shisha that week, because we used all of the foil to record these demons. This is the space that you actually have. Here, down here, this is where these deities are. And this is what we managed to get out thanks to the aluminium foil. And fortunately, this is enough for us to be able to reconstruct the entire sequence. Now we have the wonderful book by Carolina Teotino of all these different guardian deities and their groups. This actually not only corresponds to a group that I will show in a moment that we find on the inner sarcophagus of Ufa, but also that we find on several sarcophagi beginning in the New Kingdom, but going on into the late period. And underneath, these signs are enough to tell us that this is Book of the Dead, chapter 72, which we were actually missing in the tomb of Menachem Nekau. It's one of the most frequent chapters that appear on sarcophagi in the late period. And we find it here in one or perhaps two lines. There is no space for more on the inside of the sarcophagus. And this is exactly the same sequence as we find in miniature, because Ufa has way more decoration, way more text, on the inner sarcophagus of Ufa. Jan Assmann has called it the underworld police of Osiris. Several groups of guardians, including gate guardians, the Stundenwachen, which would be like the wake, and so on. Very often in exactly this same sequence. In the case of Ufa, there's over 70 of these gods. We suppose that in Menachem Nekau the sequence was the same, but took the entire surface of the sarcophagus. The tomb of Ufa, with which I will spend the rest of today, is the most interesting on the Abusir necropolis in terms of decoration, because it has an enormous amount of decoration for such a small surface that is actually covered with it. It's, in terms of decoration scope, it is only rivaled by Padiamenope, TT33, which is, however, incomparably huge if you put it next to Ufa. That's a palace tomb with many subsequent chambers. Ufa, the only decorated is the burial chamber, which is smaller than the room which we are in now, but it's filled in by an outer sarcophagus, fully decorated, by an inner sarcophagus, fully decorated. Ufa even had a wooden coffin. Unfortunately, too little has been preserved, but we do know it was decorated as well. Within the tomb of UFR, we find a huge number of either completely unknown texts or texts that have not been found in any other tomb. Also, in many places where there are toponyms in texts that we know from elsewhere, the toponyms from these texts have been replaced by Heliopolis. There are a lot of Heliopolitan references, and this had to be very important for EUFR. And also, I like to say that EUFR is a priest among warriors, because we have all these high military officials. EUFR among them had only priestly titles, but also he was very sick towards the end of his life. We don't know exactly what it was. I have now ordered anthropologists to re-examine the remains, because the remains of UFR have been only examined in the 1980s, so maybe now we can learn more. But Evgen Strohal, our anthropologist, in the 1980s, said at that time that he probably lost the ability to walk and move in the last 2 years of his life. So he was not even material for high military commander, but he had these very high priestly titles, and we will see some other things that also probably connect him, at least maybe in the early stages of his career, with the military niveau. When I spoke about the size of the burial chamber, this is the burial chamber of EUFR with me for scale. There is no ceiling at the moment. It collapsed during excavation. Fortunately, the ceiling was not decorated, and nothing from the decoration of the tomb was lost. These shaft tombs, they are dug in the so-called tafla, which is a very brittle rock, especially when it is exposed to sun and dries out. It's very dangerous. Nothing has fallen on us since. Nobody was hurt at the time when a bit of tafla fell on the ceiling of the tomb of UFR. And in the end, fortunately now, we have a huge construction over the sarcophagus and over the burial chamber of EUFR, so it's quite easy to work there. And in a way, we also use the tomb as a photographic laboratory sometimes to make pictures. So there, in the burial chamber of EUFR, as I said, there are a lot of new and unusual texts. Those of you who work with ancient texts know that it's, on the one hand, it's a complete dream to find a new unknown text, but it can quickly turn into a nightmare when you have nothing to compare that text with, and the text is, as it is unfortunately often the case, very faulty. So in the northern and on part of the eastern wall, we have one complete version of the purification ritual. Another version adopted for the king, probably at coronation, we know from the Berlin Papyrus 13242. Also, we have some fragments, and I will talk more about this tomorrow, about this ritual. On the south wall, there are texts known as laboratory texts from Ptolemaic temples that are devoted to ointment making and similar, and they are followed by a version of a mummification ritual. They are not the embalming ritual, which is known from papyri. This is a text, again, to which I have been able to identify no parallels, but they return the individual members of the body to the deceased, and at the same time they equip them with amulets, and these amulets are depicted in the middle of the ritual, and they probably are those that are actually drawn on little pieces of linen. So it's a kind of ritual that gives these linen pieces as amulets to the mummy in making. On the eastern wall, we have the cult theological treatise published by Jan Assmann as König als Sonnenpriester, including the very royal part where the sun god gives Egypt to, in this case, EUFR, to rule over it. Nothing has been edited out. We have Litany to the Sun and several texts devoted to sunrise. The kind of tripartite scene that you can see on the screen belongs to this eastern wall, and it represents the sun rising in the east of the sky, being aided by the Hech gods, who are identified with UFR, rising to the cry of the four solar baboons, to their sacred language, sacred songs, as the accompanying texts describe it, and importantly, the Mehen serpent depicted over with a label that this is indeed the Mehen serpent, and I will come back to him in a while. On the inner and outer sarcophagi, UFR is presented as the sun god. Several times it's explicitly said he is Re, he is the sun god, and he also takes his place in several texts. And on the western and eastern walls, and this will be the most important part for the rest of my talk today, we find an encyclopedia of sacred snakes. And again, the western wall is the entrance wall, the place, the part through which the mummy entered the burial chamber, and the place where there is a hole through which the burial chamber can be entered. And once again, unlike, it's not the pyramid texts, serpent spells, but it's this serpent encyclopedia that takes the protector role of the entrance of the tomb. But firstly, UFR as sun god, within his sarcophagus, the inner sarcophagus, UFR is actually encircled by the seven-headed Mehen serpent, described both as Mehen and Asheru, exactly as the solar Osirian mummy in the sixth hour of the Amduat. It is perhaps no chance, not by mere chance, that the solar Osirian mummy encircled within Mehen in the Amduat is called Iuf, and our mummy encircled is Iuf-Ah. This is a field drawing. It's not the complete drawing that we are now having this all redone. The field drawing of the western wall of the burial chamber of Iuf-Ah. This is the entrance. This is the entrance part. And around it, just like in the case of that we've seen in Jehuti Emhat, and that's kind of the norm for the tombs of this time, we find serpents guarding it. But here it's very different serpents. Firstly, this serpent encyclopedia is illustrated, which we never find in the case of the anti-serpent spells of the pyramid text. Secondly, these are no ordinary serpents. These are not snakes that an Egyptian could meet while walking in the fields and along the Nile. They, as they are described, they are huge. Very often they cannot be seen. They reside sometimes in the sky, sometimes in the underworld, but many of them have a hairy ta, an earthly form. And at the end of this lecture, I will dare speculate what this earthly form may have been. But the divine form of these snakes is really absolutely huge. So it's something that that could not have been met in reality. To the encyclopedia on the western wall belongs also, or belong two texts with their associated images on the eastern wall. Mehen, here, the serpent guardian of the sun god, labeled as such, and provided with the same, with another version of the same text that he has as Mehen on the western wall. And Tutu, the Lord of Demons, as he is sometimes described, the son of Neit, and the god that can actually call together the Jaisu or Chesu or however they are called, the arrows of Neit, these demonic powers that rise at the end of the year and spread chaos and disease through Egypt and have to be neutralized in the beginning of the new year. And here, Tutu is described as a snake. As for this snake, It is a snake that has the body of a lion and head of a man, and his tail is a snake. But he is called a snake. I like to say that he is red from left to right. So he's treated as a serpent, as another of this serpent encyclopedia. Probably he is one who has also power over these huge serpents that also come out at Wepet Renpet in the beginning of the new year. So just to have a look at few of them, all of these entries of the snake encyclopedia, as we called it, are put together in a similar way. They have an image. Most of them begin as for this snake, it is a snake that is, and then a description of the snake follows. Then the text says how the snake should be worshipped, when and where the snake can be met. This one, Nis Imiu Nebisen, or the one who summons those who are in their fire, written in nice Ptolemaic with a cat. So Nis Miu. Actually, it still appears in LGG as the tomcat who calls those who are in their fire, because until EUFR, this was the only version of this snake that was known to Egyptology. That's from the Jumilac papyrus, from this local theologies. And it's exactly the same, only what is very interesting is that in Yufa, this guy is the most important. And these are deities that follow him. And if you look at the vignette from the Jumilac papyrus, the snake is this tiny thing, and these are the gods that follow him. So apparently they are here much more important. And the citation, the labels that can be found on the vignette of the Jumilac papyrus are actually quoted or appear as part of the text that describes the Nis Imiu Nebisen in the tomb of Iwefa. So all of these labels that here look like they maybe refer to this guy here and this guy here, no, they refer to this serpent. Then we have this guy for whom we have absolutely no parallel, and we like to call him the basilisk, just because we like it. There's no other reason. He has four hands in the front, four feet at the back, four wings, the Egyptian text says like those of locusts, and two heads of a turtle. So sometimes we organize contests for secondary school students, like art contests, to be inspired by our work. And this is my all-time favorite that we got. This is actually made by a secondary student who read our Czech translation of the text and drew the basilisk according to the text. So yes, he is striped like this in the Egyptian description. I like the turtle heads. And the size of him is a kind of ancient Egyptian absolute numbers. It's all the numerals in three. So it's 3,333,000 and so on and so forth. It's difficult for me to count in English, but this huge number. So this is our basilisk. Then, of course, we have some snakes with which we managed to overlap the Karnak project, which I was very, very happy to discover that this is not only in EUFR, a snake bearing the nine forms of Ptah, here in EUFR also labeled. This is from the astronomical ceiling in Esna. All of these snakes, they are in the Duat, but they are also in the sky, according to their texts. And this is a small amulet of the 19th dynasty, featuring exactly the same snake, with his front and his back being exactly at the same spaces as he is described in the tomb of Eufr. And from Karnak, from the excavation of Professor Loran here, exactly the same serpent once again, bearing the nine forms of Ptah. And interestingly, also we have this serpent here twice. So we know that also this serpent must have something to do with EUFR's version, but he's not there. He's not in our tomb. And finally, the most important serpent in the tomb of EUFR, and that is Mehen, the protector of the sun god, or as I like to say, the ultimate protector of the sun god, because he protects from the front, because he has these nine or seven or five heads. He's Ashaheru. He's many-headed. It doesn't say how many heads he has. And indeed, he has anything between, actually even one, to nine heads. I haven't seen more yet. He has eyes on the folds of his body. And he has seven claws on his tail. In the text, it says they act like guardians. So from the front, from the middle, and from the back, Mehen is dangerous to anyone and anything that would endanger the soul or body within him. And once again, from Karnak, we find the Mehen serpent. And I was particularly delighted to see this, because you can see that in the Karnak version, the heads are colored. First one is black, then the two are, I don't know if it's white or something, but these are red, these are yellow. And the accompanying text to our Mehen actually says that his first head is made of black eye paint. These two are red, and these two are of gold. So it is exactly the same serpent, only in EUFR there is no color in the decoration. So here this nicely all comes together. There's still a lot of interpretation to be done, but it's really interesting to see that this was not something that only EUFR had in his tomb. Besides this being a kind of guardian, this kind of guardian selection or collection of guardian serpents that that would guard EUFR and his tomb, the entire snake encyclopedia, according to the text that accompanies Mehen, actually works as an initiation handbook of the Cherep Selket priest, of the priest who was a serpent charmer, a magician, but also a physician, also a doctor, and of whom we know another handbook. And that is the so-called Brooklyn Snakebite Papyrus, or the Traité d'Ophiologie, as it was published. This comes approximately from the same time as EUFR. Unfortunately, we don't know where it comes from. It has been conjectured by several Egyptologists that it may come from Heliopolis, which would nicely connect it to the Heliopolitan connection of EUFR. And it describes the real serpents that an Egyptian could meet, the effects of their bites, and how, or if at all, the Cherep Selket should be treating them. In some of these cases, they say, well, you know, you let him be because he'll die anyway, no matter what you try. Sometimes it gives real treatments, sometimes it gives magical treatments. The real treatments very often include emetics, so to purge the poison out of the body. Of course, when selecting a snake from the real snake encyclopedia, the F had to be the one I would choose, because all Egyptologists know this snake very, very well. So there are 37 snakes described in this real-life encyclopedia. Only 24 of these are preserved. The first part is really a kind of encyclopedic work. The second part then gives all these various remedies and magical incantations and other things. This is how it is structured, and it's many of these entries of the first part are actually structured exactly the same as the encyclopedia of EUFR. It says here, it says Irfi, as for the fee snake, but often it also says ir hefaupen as for this snake. And then it gives a description of the snake, which in this case, it's very precise. It has, it's got a narrow neck and a huge, sorry, I can't, I'm completely unable to turn this off, a huge head and a small neck. And its color is like that of a quail chick. And you can compare yourselves whether the Egyptians were good observers in terms of color. So this is the fee snake in the Serpent Encyclopedia. So these are kind of parallel handbooks of the Cherepselket priest. One on the papyrus is a compendium of real life knowledge about snakes that the priest would meet. And in UFR's tomb, he's got a collection of sacred serpents that would come out towards the end of the year and had the power to protect Egypt. Now, these, however, had their earthly forms. And when I was wondering what could these earthly forms be, because very often there is some inspiration for such creatures. Think about medieval dragons. They did not come out of our heads. And the Cherepselket priest has, throughout Egyptian history, another important role. And that was he accompanied expeditions into the desert, would de-snake places where the expedition would camp. In Dar al-Medina, they would work in the royal cemetery, de-snaking the tombs or the sites where the tombs were to be. So they would go out with military expeditions, with mining expeditions, also with people who would work on tomb sites and would clear all of these out of snakes. So they were there in the deserts. This, by the way, connects even EUFR as a priest to his military neighbors on the cemetery. As a Cherepselket priest, he would be one that would actually accompany the military. But also a Cherepselket priest was in prime position to see these, for example, these fossils inside the desert. This is now pure speculation to have fun at the very end. But I was there in the so-called Whale Valley. And when you see these whale skeletons, you actually have a feeling that you are looking at a snake with feet and hands. We know from the reports of ancient Greeks that there were fossils out in the open in ancient Egypt. So maybe a Cherepselket had a chance to see something like this. And out of an encounter in the desert, our beautiful basilisks and serpents like this rose. Be it as it may, they guarded our inhabitants of the Abusir necropolis well. Guarded their stay in the afterlife up until we came, excavated them. But I always get asked whether I'm afraid that we actually enter the tombs of these people, take them out, study them. And then I always say no, because all of these ancient Egyptians said they wished that their name would last forever. And we keep on repeating their names over and over again, not only in Egypt, but would EUFR think that his name would be repeated so many times in Paris today? So I'm not afraid. I think if he's up there somewhere, he will once speak for me. Thank you very much for your attention. Thank you.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.